evening, goblins and ghosts. Welcome to another episode of Brian and Eric Don't Belong Here. I am your host here as ever with my handsome and dashing co-host, Brian. Brian, what's up?
That's me. I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little excited, a little nervous for today's episode. We're doing something we've never done before.
What's that?
We're going right to the book, baby.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. We're going to the book. We're at Sunday school, papa.
I think I specifically said I absolutely would at no point read a book for this podcast.
Yeah, we had a strict no books rule for the first 8,000 episodes that have been lost in the vault.
Which, you know, it does make it kind of silly to do a podcast beneath the New York Public Library.
Don't
and
touch
be
the books.
Don't fucking go near a book.
You don't touch a book.
This is a computer only. We are here to use the computers, and that is it.
Let me smell you. You got the old book smell. Get the hell out of here. Go take a shower. Come back later.
We are here for the public resource of Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's right. We rent a DVD occasionally.
But no, you've grabbed a tome off of the bookshelf.
I've grabbed a tome, baby. So this is, we were talking a little bit before the show. My personal obsession and one of my chief interests behind doing this show is the study and understanding of the magical tradition in the West, but also around the world. And you were mentioning for you, it's kind of a tough topic.
It is definitely one of, I think, your interest points, and it is one of the ones I have the most difficulty. Suspending disbelief is the wrong word.
Sure.
To explain it is like, I'm not a religious person. I'm not a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. I, you know, lean a little more towards we are cosmic accidents and like mm-hmm. things like even ghosts and the paranormal. I feel like I can kind of explain in that of like, there are things we don't understand. It's once you get into magic, there's a mysticism to it that sure. I just definitely don't. I don't understand it. I'll say mm-hmm. that. I don't know mm-hmm. anything about it. So it's a little quick, but it's the one I have the most trouble. Like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very funny. And I think there's a funny dynamic in our show where you are very gung-ho. I think that worldview gives you a lot of courage, and you are very, or sure, recklessness, sure. depending on how we want to phrase it. No one
idiocy.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of words we can use. Whereas I am 100% a little scaredy cat baby boy, scared of the ghosts, scared of the spirits, don't want to touch it because I don't know if I believe it or not.
Sure.
But I sort of feel like maybe there's something there. Maybe there's a little fire with all that smoke, a little baby in the bathwater. And it's Pascal's wager for me. It's like, what if it is real and we accidentally do damn ourselves for all eternity?
It's the, I think, you know, if you were to imagine two dumb little idiot boys in the woods and there's a cave and it was like, let's see if there's a bear in there. No, there might be a bear in there.
There truly could be a bear in there. Yeah. All the folklore says don't eat the bright red berry. And we're just sniffing it. We're licking it a little bit. We're not quite biting into it, but we're just rubbing it on our faces. Now we have a rash. We're not sure.
This is why we can't get invited on a Bigfoot hunt. We keep licking exactly. all the berries.
Yeah, you don't even look at the gun. Don't even. Here's a bell. If you get in trouble, just ring it.
Have you ever? This is extremely off topic. Have you ever shot a gun?
Yes, I have.
I have as well, and I have a lot of trouble with the recoil.
Sure, Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, I've shot a shotgun and like a couple of rifles.
Okay,
and every single time it's like, oh no.
Yeah,
it is only in the context of like a range or like shooting like clay pellets or clay pigeons.
Yeah.
Every single time it's like, oh no.
Yeah, it's dude, it's powerful. Yeah. I once went during a bachelor party like you do. It was in North Carolina outside Asheville. And there was just a woman who came in like a full cocktail dress and heels and pearls and was just cranking on a Magnum. I was like, oh, I guess.
All this right.
Is, yeah, fair. Okay. Fair enough. I was like hung over in a hoodie, just like, I don't know where I am.
Oh, boy. But yeah, no, we don't get to hold the gun during a Sasquatch hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's actually kind of a great segue to this because there was something like for me holding a gun I found shooting at a range, like, surprisingly kind of fun. Like, it is a fun thing, but there was also a sense of, like, standing at the edge of a very tall building where it's like, I could die. Like, there is a possibility death with a wrong move here.
Right.
And I actually, reading through these books, I get the sense of a certain seriousness. If you take it at, if you buy into the world of what it's saying, there's a certain seriousness to it. So the book I wanted to cover with you today or go over is called Techniques of High Magic, A Manual of Self-Initiation by Francis King and Stephen Skinner, the third revised edition. I just want to, it's got a super cool cover.
It's sort of got a bishop looking guy.
Sure.
A couple of elephants.
Uh-huh.
A lady with a sword. It's pretty rad. It doesn't look out of place. And you kind of mentioned this yourself. We're in a room right now with a lot of tabletop role-playing game materials.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look out of place with one of those.
It could, the cover could easily be the cover of like an OSR, right. Like manual, like hex crawl kind of deal. Yeah, very, very cool art. So I guess one of the things that fascinates me about magic and the kind of Western occult tradition specifically is that, like, it's kind of everywhere. It's kind of saturated our culture. Like, everything from role-playing games to fantasy to stories. Like, everybody's heard of Merlin. Everybody knows who Gandalf is. This wizard archetype is very much, everybody feels that. I mean, from your top level, coming in raw, understanding, like, what do you think of magic and wizard? Like, what is your impression of it? Not whether it's real or not, but just, like, what comes to mind when you think
it's,
of that?
I guess what you're saying is you're Merlin, you're Gandalf, you're a sort of, like, unknown force that a very studious a very studious scholar of this very arcane lost art can sort of manipulate is my general archetypal idea.
Sure. Yeah, that's pretty solid. Are you familiar at all with like Aleister Crowley and that kind of
That's the Satanism guy, right? Church of Satan?
No, he was a British like occultist. He's sort of influenced a lot. Dude, I don't remember his name either. But there is the Church of Satanism guy. Crowley.
Oh, that was LaVey. Their names are not Anton similar LaVey. At all.
But they start with an A.
They start with an A.
There's an L in both of them. We're pretty much 80% there. I'm not sure they're a different person, actually, now that you bring it up.
You seen him in the same fucking room?
Exactly. No, sir. I only bring up Crowley because he's the other. He comes up a lot in pop culture. And he was a great popularizer of occult practices and ritual magic practices. He was, I think, one of the founders of the Order of the Golden Dawn, which is like a big kind of British thing that spread all over the world. It's kind of defunct now, but he led one of the many like occult revivals that have happened throughout time. Controversial figure for many reasons. But anyway, so this book, Techniques of High Magic, by Francis King and Stephen Skinner, is a great, it's a really solid survey of kind of an overview of the contents of when we talk about like, wait, in real life, because there were real people who were wizards, or whether or not you believe in magic, like they did these practices, and there was an actual like series of things they did, like in the same way there were carpenters, and like carpenters have tools, and there's things they know how to do. Wizards were like kind of a profession throughout time. And this book is kind of an overview of what that knowledge and what those tools are. So I'm just going to, we've never done this before. We've never worked from a book. I don't know how this is going to go. I'm not even sure I can still read. So I might just be I'm looking at pictures of stick figures with figure eight boobs, and I'm just saying words. There's not even a book in front of me.
We'll figure it out.
We're going to go. So yeah, I'll read a little bit from some interesting passages.
I guess I have a question from, you know, you mentioned like essentially wizards was a profession. Was it a... And I don't know if you know this. This might be a question for like a future guest.
Yeah, sure.
Was a wizard like you think of like Merlin, like someone in like the High Court, and like King Arthur didn't exist, right? That's like a folkloric kind of...
I don't know. There could have been like a Celtic Welsh warlord who was fighting off the Saxons on whom that legend is based. But sure. I don't know if he's a historical person or not.
But like, was like the wizard an esteemed position, or was it always kind of... is that your fucking weird bud that you like, oh God, you got to stop listening. Like if the president had like a psychic, would be like, uh-oh.
I think it honestly depends on the time and the culture and the specific like political structure we're talking about. But there's certainly, I kind of think of it like a wizard was kind of like a doctor, in the sense that there are just like doctor, maybe there's like a shitty doctor in your town, I shouldn't even say shitty, but just like a low level guy who you can kind of afford,
right?
And then the king might have his own royal physician.
Sure.
In this way, there were certainly and some of the most fascinating figures from this were, so John Dee is a big one. John Dee was like a royal, I'm going to totally get this wrong, and I don't even remember the British queen for whom he was. Yeah, maybe some quick Googling.
Yeah, what's the name?
John Dee, J-O-H-N-D-E-E.
I have John Dee was an English mathematician, astronomer, astrologer, teacher, occultist, and alchemist.
Yes.
He was the court astronomer for and advisor to Elizabeth I, and spent much of his time on alchemy, divination, hermetic philosophy. As an antiquarian, he had one of the largest libraries in England at the time.
Yeah, there you
interesting.
Go. So there were figures. John Dee is a very famous one, and there's a lot recorded about him. But it suggests that it certainly was not unheard of or even uncommon further to be a court, basically, magician. Like, they weren't calling this guy Merlin, but he was performing magical rites and rituals and trying to talk to spirits.
He had Merlin's job.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So it was definitely a thing, and I think magic was more integrated into society and culture than it is now. And the other thing to remember, and you could look at this in a in kind of a dismissive way, in the sense of like, well, they just didn't know what science was real and what was not, meaning like alchemy kind of became chemistry later, like laid the foundations for chemistry. A lot of the stuff, there was not the hard distinction between what we today would call the hard material sciences and a lot of the magical sciences.
Man, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
And even like, it's worth noting, like even guys like Isaac Newton was super into the occult and alchemy and shit like that.
I didn't know that, but that makes a lot of sense.
And there wasn't, it's like you're studying numbers, but you're also studying these other subject areas, and there was not that hard distinction between
yeah,
those things.
Yeah, I guess that's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you one example with that, actually. They talk about this in the book. Like back in the day when they were figuring out kind of how like navigation worked, parts of navigation were considered in a cult magical science called the haven finding art. Meaning like you're out at sea. How the fuck do you find a harbor? Like, you don't have GPS. You're relying on the stars.
As far as I'm concerned, GPS is wizardry and magic.
Literally, yes. Like, literally, yes. I think we're about a decade away from, like, a total societal collapse where there is still some functioning technology and nobody has any idea how it works. And yeah, we are just surrounded once again by magical artifacts, which is, like...
I'd argue sooner than any of us would like to believe.
Yeah. So I'll read. So right from this is actually right in the introduction. This is the passage I was looking for. This is introduction to the second edition. And the John Dee, they mentioned John Dee specifically. It is interesting to note that when the mob stormed the house of Dr. John Dee more than 400 years ago, it was not his magical equipment or scrying glass that they destroyed, but his sextants and quadrants, the standard equipment of the astronomer and the mariner. In the last 400 years, both the magical quote-unquote haven-finding art, as they then called navigation, and the art of knowing where in the sky certain stars are to be found, astronomy, have become accepted sciences and commonplace. However, the art of magic in those days probably was more commonplace than either astronomy or navigation.
Huh.
So what's interesting about this book and this worldview that I love is they kind of present magic and magical study and practice as like essentially this forgotten science. Like it's this part, it's this aspect of the world that we've just completely devalued and deprioritized and don't take seriously at all. Like imagine we never invented microscopes and never found out what bacteria was and just completely dismissed that aspect and element of reality.
Right.
People who did stuff to try to interact with bacteria and had like antibiotics and things like that would be seen as complete fucking quacks and maniacs. Like, oh yeah, you're dealing with these invisible things inside of my body. Good one. You know what I mean?
I don't know if it's entirely relevant, but it reminded me of that Arthur C. Clarke quote that any sufficient advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of what I think that is the premise of a lot of this stuff is that these are just very nascent and kind of undeveloped inquiries into aspects of reality that we still don't understand. And with sufficient time and attention, they could certainly develop into something, I guess you could say maybe more standardized or more well understood, just in the same way that like physics or astronomy or chemistry is.
That's so funny of like, you know, literally just talking minutes ago, but like how magic is the toughest one for me to kind of get my head around. It's hard to argue with that standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to come up with a, fuck.
and the other thing to think about is that in some ways, like, magic was sort of suppressed just in the same way as many of in like medieval Europe, as many other sciences were by the dominant religion.
Sure.
Like Galileo was blinded for studying astronomy, essentially.
Right. And
people were burned at the stake for doing witchcraft and magic and stuff like that. So there's a world, there's an alternate universe or just like another way of looking at this where it's like, maybe magic was just one of the sciences that never had its resurgence, that was never taken seriously again.
Sure. Man.
So that to me is what's fascinating, is just this idea that this is a very common thing that's found. And this is where this book is specifically about, like the Western esoteric occult magical tradition. But this shit is all over the world. Pretty much every culture on the planet has a version of this, of like, hey, there's entities, there are like non-material entities and divine entities, and there's ways of interacting with them, and they have like a massive influence on reality. Man. Every culture in the world.
Yeah, shit. And that makes so much sense that there would be on one level.
Yeah.
Man, that's fascinating. I'm having trouble articulating what's happening in my brain right now. It is soup.
Yes.
Magical little gremlins have turned my brain into soup. That's what I believe now.
Bingo. Now you get it. Now you fully understood. Episode over. And I mean, one thing I like about this book is they are very almost agnostic. And like you can take and we'll go through some of the actual techniques, and you can look at them and just look at them through a very psychological lens. Like, oh, obviously these are just methods of manipulating your own psychology to do X, Y, and Z. And what he says in the book, like this guy, Stephen Skinner, is very much, we've talked a little bit about the spirit versus the psychological model of magic, whereas like one side says it's all in your head and it's all your own beliefs and the power of your own beliefs. And the other side said is like, no, there's actual discrete entities that are exterior to you. And Stephen Skinner, I think, is very much on the spirit side of this. But in the book, they say like, it actually doesn't matter what you believe.
Interesting.
They propose a very scientific approach to this, which is just like, just do it and record what happens and see what happens in your life.
So we should maybe do that at some point.
Well, I'll get into that, because the bad news is magic is hard. Magic is quite difficult, apparently.
Great.
And requires a lot of work, which sucks.
Shit.
Yeah. I'll skip some of the...
Man, can I get one more thought out of my brain?
Yeah, of course. No, of course, man.
It's kind of interesting and kind of reminds me of... So I grew up Catholic. So I spent... And I went to Catholic school and I spent a lot of time with the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting how The Old Testament, I think especially, is a, yes, it has all of this kind of spiritualness to it, but it is also a lot of guidance in not in just how to like live a moral life according to this religion that we're recording, but also how to not die. In this kind of very practical, how to, hey, maybe don't fucking kill people. We're not going to grow as a society if you're going around fucking killing people. And I think that's it. I don't, you know, that kind of just popped into my brain as a, it's interesting that that spiritual, obviously, element that's obviously very important to a lot of people, mixed with this very practical, real sense of like, hey, don't eat this and that together because it's kind of, people fucking die when they do that.
Totally.
And we don't 100%. Know. You know, you mentioned like bacteria earlier. We don't know at that time that bacteria is responsible and it gets from one thing to the other. We just know people fucking get sick and die
exactly
when they eat that. So don't do it.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of things I think in ancient practices and wisdom of just like don't necessarily know the mechanism by which something happens, or if they do speculate on the mechanism, maybe it's like quote unquote wrong now, but they kind of get the cause and effect right. They're like, it's bad when you do this thing. Maybe we're attributing it to something else, but we kind of recommend you don't do that.
Right. Right. And I'm wondering, is there an element of magic that, am I wrong here? Is there an element of magic that is arguing there are still those elements of like a cause and effect that we don't understand? And is magic kind of a blanket term for those things we don't understand? Or are they saying that magic is a thing and it is what is responsible for those causes and effects? Does that make any sense?
I would say, I'll actually read you. So there's four, this book is very helpful in that it lays out just up top kind of four principles of magic and a definition of magic. But I think I would say, and I think this is actually where magic and religion perhaps diverge. I mean, that's a whole other topic, but because they intersect and they over, it's like a very complicated, like eight circle Venn diagram that has broken my brain. But like
that we are not equipped to talk about.
Not at all. Magic, fun. I just learned this morning the difference between a street magician and a wizard. So I'm really... We're really traversing the learning curve at warp speed here.
Yeah, really hated to break to you that David Blaine is not...
Yeah, God, tell us where your demons are, David! I don't care what they say. That's not natural.
That's
what he's doing on that stage, no sir.
No,
that's paranormal activity right there. But I think one of the key areas where magic and religion maybe diverge kind of is that magic is sort of like a series of practices and tools for perhaps inquiry and discovery and for kind of making things happen. I think it's, and I might be way off base here, but just my very cursory understanding is like, just like science, it's kind of amoral. It's not telling you what to do. It's just like, hey, if you want to try some of this stuff, if you want to look into these things, you want to open some of these doors, here's the kind of process for doing that and how you do it. And there's very much a right way, at least within the context of this, there's very much a right way and a wrong way to do stuff. Just like if you were a carpenter, there's a kind of a right way and a wrong way to put a roof on a house and stuff like that.
The deck is going to collapse if you don't do it a certain way.
Exactly. Yes. So why don't I'll get into the definition of magic. So for the purpose of this book, then, the word magic is primarily, and this is, I'm reading right from the book, primarily used in the same sense that it is defined by the overwhelming majority of contemporary magical practitioners. The art and science of using little known natural forces in order to achieve changes in consciousness and the physical environment. We also use the word magic in a secondary sense as meaning the entire body of doctrines and techniques concerning the conjuration, nature, and power of angels, spirits, demons, and other non-human entities, the manufacture and consecration of wands, swords, and other instruments used by magicians in the performance of their art, ritual divination by such methods as geomancy, the manufacture and consecration of talismans, and the exploration of universes other than that with which we are familiar.
Huh. I'm going to be real. I didn't get much of that.
Me neither. Thank God. So, that's a big paragraph. And before we, I just want to say, if you're at all interested in magic, buy this book.
Mm.
We're going to be covering kind of sections from it throughout this episode. Please support the authors, Techniques of High Magic, A Manual of Self-Initiation by Francis King and Stephen Skinner, third revised edition. They both individually, and I think together, they've collabed on some other stuff. I first heard about this book on the wonderful podcast Glitch Bottle with Alexander Eth, and he just does a deep dive. He talks to a lot of occult and magical practitioners, and he is like, he's kind of the opposite of our show. He's
sure.
Like a one man, hyper well researched, very scholarly. Like he'll get a guest on and just ask questions that I'm like, I don't even know where to. That's like a whole degree in and of itself. And I've heard Stephen Skinner on his show, and I believe that's where I first heard about this book.
Got it.
So it's an all, if you're at all interested in magic as a topic or just want to learn more about it, this is a great starting place. So the art and science of using little-known natural forces in order to achieve changes in consciousness and the physical environment, meaning just kind of what we were talking about before, it's like these leftover areas that are not really in the mainstream of human inquiry that may encompass things outside of normal material physical reality. How do you observe and interact with and manipulate them to create changes both in your mind and the physical world? Which is broad.
Yes.
That's very broad.
Very broad.
And in the second part, they talk about the entire body of doctrines and techniques concerning the conjuration nature and power of angel spirits, demons, and other non-human entities. So this is like a huge... It's a little bit difficult to define what magic is, but... I think it's safe to say that a huge part of it postulates the existence of these non-human intelligences or entities.
Interesting.
And ways of interacting with them.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting, interesting.
And so it's sort of like, that's a big study. And then obviously this last piece, which is just like a big wide open question mark, the exploration of universes other than that with which we are familiar.
Huh.
So I'm going to
dive. Once again, very broad.
A lot going on there. So they get a little more specific. So they outline four principles / kind of theoretical underpinnings of magic. And I'm just going to read them to you right now.
Great.
That the universe of the physical scientist is only a part, and by no means the most important part, of total reality. So right there, they're saying that like, there's nothing in magic that actually contradicts material science.
Sure.
The idea is that that's just a piece of reality. That it's not wrong. Like you go inside that box of the physical world. Like material science works. Like yeah, astronomy is great. Physics are great. But it's just one piece.
Magic likes physics.
Yeah, magic is cool with physics, baby. But there is more. So in this worldview, there's more to the story than that. Number two, that human willpower is a real force, capable of being trained and concentrated, and that the disciplined will is capable of changing its environment and producing supernormal effects.
Huh.
That this willpower must be directed by the imagination, and that fourth, the universe is not a mixture of chance factors and influences, but an ordered system of correspondences, and that the understanding of the pattern of correspondences enables the occultist to use them for his own purposes, good or ill.
I'm interested in the ill.
Yeah, I know.
Let's do the ill.
Yeah, hell yeah. So I mean, we were talking before about potentially, it's like you were like, hey, for one of these episodes, let's like cast a spell.
Yeah, I want to do that real bad.
Let's cast a spell. And so spells, from my understanding, kind of fall into two categories, which may be mixed. And this is one thing I'm kind of grappling with intellectually, is trying to understand this, is spells in the traditional occult, like when you say like, let's cast a spell, there's kind of two broad categories as I understand them right now. One is that you interact with some kind of entity that governs that sort of aspect of reality.
Got it.
And you get them to do the thing you want to do. So you want to cast a
patron
love spell
of some kind.
Yeah, exactly. You get in touch with some kind of spiritual entity that is kind of in charge of that domain. Then you say, make this person fall in love with me. And they go about whatever mysterious byways they have access to. And they do that thing.
Right.
Which would result in a series of synchronicities or coincidences that kind of result in the outcome you want.
I have a thought. If you finish your thought and then I'll
go for it.
Okay. I remember as a kid, you know, speaking growing up Catholic, Catholic has this entire catalog of saints.
Yes.
And a lot of like the saints are the patron saint of. Yep. And I remember my mom being like, if something was missing, like, you know, you couldn't find your keys or something or your wallet, my mom would be like, oh, pray to Saint Anthony. And that's something she still says to this day.
Yes.
Of like, pray to Saint Anthony and Saint Anthony will help you find your thing, which is very funny that that's very similar.
So let's take, that's not a coincidence at all.
Sure.
So let's take that off ramp for a second.
Yeah.
So one way to view Catholicism is almost like, imagine, we'll just say, we'll say Europe and the Mediterranean, but similar things have happened in other cultures with other religions. But imagine Europe and the Mediterranean as this like burbling cauldron of cults and local religions and practices and ways of interacting with, for lack of a better term, like local spiritual entities, minor gods and deities and things like that. Like you go to, and the Roman Empire was in fact famous for, though very brutal in some ways, its religious tolerance. As long as you paid taxes to Caesar, you
sure.
could worship Isis, you could worship your weird ball god, you could, and in fact, they like, they, there's some scholarly work that suggests they almost viewed cults in the way that we view, like, takeout, like, in the sense of, like, oh, sick, there's a new Thai place on the corner, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, awesome, there's a new death cult, on, and like, whatever. And so, there was just these, this sort of really diverse way of interacting with this world.
Sure.
And one of the reasons Christianity and Catholicism was seen as such a threat was due to its fundamental intolerance to these other methods. And it's almost like you have a world filled with mom and pop shops and Walmart comes in.
Interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
And so it's this big like amoeba-like structure that comes in and starts subsuming and shutting down these other cults.
Yeah.
And now instead of your local cult, no, there's the Christian priest who does that. These other deities and deities and like local spirits, now that's a saint who takes over that function.
It's hey, you need that? We got that.
Yeah,
yep,
yeah,
we
yeah.
got that. We got that.
And it's 100%. And it's very clever. And it's one of the one of the observations people often make is like all of the pagan things that have been subsumed by Christianity. So it's like the Christmas tree. You set up a fir tree inside of your home that you basically worship during the season. Like that's an old
thing. We talked about this during our first episode of the new show.
Exactly. Easter, like why is there a fertility bunny in the middle? You know what I mean? Like there's all sorts of, and it's just because as this almost like amoeba thing rolled over the cultural landscape, it subsumed these elements and integrated them inside itself.
Man, that makes so much, that's so interesting.
And we'll even get into it later. Like, I mean, the Christian mass is a very magical actual thing. There's a lot of stuff going on there that is just straight up that you see in inside of magical ritual, and it's just the kind of Christian version of these practices that already existed, like the Eucharist, things like that.
Interesting.
So going back to the so number one is basically using some kind of entity to get an outcome. The second part is playing, the second way that a spell can kind of work is playing on these correspondences. So say it's a I don't actually know how any love spells work, but it's like a lot of things where it's like you get a lock of their hair, or you get like a piece of the person, or you write their name on a paper shaped like a like something like that. You're somehow like playing the keys of reality.
Interesting.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
So so that's what so the study of magic is basically the study of these correspondences and how you can manipulate one thing here to change something else over there.
Yeah.
And this idea that the human will is actually a sort of creative force that can be directed and made manifest in the imagination. And via that, I mean, you can see already in this, like a lot of like byways and how these things connect to other occult areas, like say positive thought or new thought, where it's like you can buy like, or like the secret, you know, where yeah, it's like, right. Oh, by concentrating on the Ferrari, I get the Ferrari, like that kind
do
of.
Do we have to do a whole episode on the secret?
We totally do.
It, we so reference it so much.
I'm so into the fucking secret. Yeah, man. I think it's so weird. Well, it's that is one of the things where in my own life, I've just done some very small experiments with it. And have noticed kind of weird things happen. And it's and that's a perfect example of like, there's no way to ever prove. Like, right. I haven't had anything dramatic like the Jim Carrey story where he writes the check to himself for... Have you heard the story?
No.
Dude, this is fake. We can look this up on YouTube. But Jim Carrey tells a story about how he wrote a check to himself for, I think it's like $1 million for acting services rendered. And he keeps it in his wallet. And this is when he was nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's walking around, and it's dated for a certain date. And he's walking around, and it's in his wallet, and this check is just deteriorating, getting crumbled. It's like, I don't know how long it was, but I think it's years. And literally, he gets the check for Dumb and Dumber, like,
no
on
shit.
The date
no
of this check.
Shit.
Yeah.
And now he's in Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
And now, yeah, he's at the pinnacle of success. So there's just stories like that where... There's like stories like that where it's... You know, is it real? Is it bullshit? And this is our classic. This is the territory we love to fucking right. dance around right. in. Is it real? Is it bullshit? Is it just your mind? Did that even happen? Is Jim Carrey just misremembering it, or is it a good story? But it's interesting.
There is the this is all real space.
Yeah.
There's the this is all bullshit space, and then there's the Brian and Eric room. We're like, yeah. We don't know.
Yeah, we're having a picnic and we're confused. Am I eating sludge or a delicious Jello? It's not clear.
We have windows of both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
How weird.
Yeah, very odd. Yeah, yeah. Do I have a cold or is that a demon tickling my larynx? I don't know. Maybe both.
No one comes into our room with us for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. We're just here alone all the time. So I'll give you so one thing that is interesting too is that this kind of cosmology, right, is a lot of world religions do have something similar to this.
Sure.
And they just say like, yeah, but don't fuck with it.
Don't
mess with it.
Refuse.
Yeah, gotta fuck with it.
gotta fuck with it. Gotta see if there's a bear in there.
Gotta pop open the hood. So just a few paragraphs down. So I'll read this. The first of these basic axioms that affirms the physical world to be only one component part of total reality must not be understood as a denial of the existence of matter. Most magicians believe as firmly in the existence of matter as any Marxist, but they regard it as only the densest of a number of different types of existence, usually referred to as worlds or planes. The last mentioned term is an unfortunate one, for it often leads those familiar with the occult terminology to conceive of the planes as being one above the other, rather like geological strata. The magician does not look upon them in this way. Instead, he regards them as interpenetrating and coexisting with one another.
Interesting.
So they're almost like laying directly on, they're all coexisting in the same point in time.
Interesting. You know, it's... That's the way that's articulated is so interesting. Of like, once again, going back to my frame of reference of Catholicism, of like, there is earth, there is heaven, there is hell, you know?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. But like, it seems like the way magic looks, it's like, that's not really how it works.
100%. And 100%. And you see this reflected like around the world cross-culturally, everything from the kind of Nordic conception of Yggdrasil, the world tree, which is like these different elements of existence encapsulated within this tree, to even like Hindu systems of the chakras and these sort of different planes of existence and energy and whatever, sort of all laid on top of each other.
Interesting.
And so one of the things that is fascinating about this to me is like, it's almost like people all over the world are kind of coming to these same weird conclusions about the nature of reality.
It makes sense. As weird as it is, it does kind of make sense to me of like everywhere in all world cultures, throughout all of time, people have died.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And surely then it's like, well, what the fuck happens then?
Totally, totally. Yeah, 100%. Or even beyond that, like, people have strange experiences or hallucinatory experiences or visions or whatever, and like what is going on there,
right?
And to give some weight back to the purely materialistic, I would say like modernist angle, it's like, well, that's just something happening in your brain, and they're looking for an explanation of that,
right?
But there is, in my view, a certain arrogance to the idea of like, just because this is all that we see or know, how do we actually know that there's nothing else?
Sure.
You know?
Right, right.
And no, like, you kind of don't, like...
Right, there are tons of elements that we can't perceive.
Yeah.
Or, like, we need special instruments to perceive, you know, like,
yeah.
Light that we can't see with our eyes.
Exactly, like, yeah, like, going back to the bacteria example, it's like, before we had microscopes, like, there is no way to perceive it. It functionally doesn't exist. You just see outcomes, but you have no way to trace it back to this specific cause.
Right, and to steal your word, arrogant, to say like, no, we have all the tools. We see all of it now.
We know everything there is to know.
Right.
Exactly. I'm always reminded, but there was a point in like, I forget what year it was, but where they wanted to close down the U.S. Patent Office because they're like, everything possible has been invented at this point. And this was in like, I want to say sometime in the 1800s. They're like, nope, shut it
and
down.
And honestly, the world might be a better place.
Honestly, probably would. They're like, we got trains. What the fuck else? We have trains. What else could there be? Choo-choo-choo go fast? It's crazy.
Oh, and it's all been downhill from there. And now I sit in front of a screen and scroll through 240 characters of someone's take on the fucking Academy Awards. And I get mad.
Yeah,
and I get mad at this person I don't know and will never meet.
We'll never meet him.
This isn't good.
No. We've painted ourselves into some kind of strange technological corner. I actually will say, I'll divert back to this. This is one thing that's also very exciting to me about this book is like, it does kind of feel that way at the time of the recording of this podcast, at least for me. And I don't mean to sound like Ted Kaczynski, because I'm not, and I'm too scared to live in the woods by myself anyway. But like, it does sort of feel like we've painted ourselves into a technological and cultural corner where it's like, yep, we have 18 Marvel movies a year. We all sit in front of glowing screens, and the only movement we get for 8 hours a day is like moving our fingertips, and everybody's kind of unhappy and not sure what the meaning of life is. Like,
I had an actual existential kind of crisis literally yesterday.
Dude.
Of like, not like a full breakdown, but just I was bummed out all day. Just kind of like, what? An element of like, is this fucking all there is? Is this just wait for the next fucking Marvel movie, I guess?
We've built a bad zoo for ourselves.
Yes.
As an animal. We've built a very poor zoo. And I sort, and dude, I have that too, where it's like, I'm working from home. I'm currently living in the suburbs, and I'll go for walks just to get some movement and look at things that are not a screen and get some sunshine and fresh air and whatever. And I'm walking through this habitat, this terrain that we built for ourselves. And I'm just like, when did we decide to just make everything kind of ugly? Like, where did the beauty go? Like, when as a civilization were we like, you know what? That doesn't matter. Let's just use like shitty aluminum siding and like identical housing and just make these like shitty little grids to inhabit.
That all cost $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Literally.
A million points that
we made up. Yeah, by the way, yeah, that are not affordable. Like, oh, you used to build one of these with your family and it was cool and it had a thatched roof? No, sir. No.
Nope, it's ugly, it's made of aluminum, and you can never have one.
Yeah, unless you want to be a bank slave, in which case, that's fine. You can do that.
In fact, please do.
Yeah. So, and yeah, exactly. We would strongly encourage you to. So I guess it just feels like as if we are ripe for sort of an explosion and a revolution in this kind of... direction. And when I say explosion and revolution, I don't mean like bombs or bullshit like that. I just mean people turning their attention to maybe a forgotten part of experience and reality that has actually been a really big part of human civilization for the majority of our existence.
Sure.
So just how many of these other worlds and planes are supposed to exist? We're about to say something.
I'm just going to throw out there, we are 45 minutes into this episode and barely... This is part one,
We're on page 22.
This is part one of this topic.
Oh, man. We're going 10 hours. No, yeah, we can... This is... And again, I would encourage everybody to buy the book. This is how dense and interesting this is. We're literally not even past the introduction.
Yeah, it's... So this is... I was... you mentioned this book, and I was a little like, yeah, like if you think we can cover it, like let's do it. But I, you know, kind of going through my head, like, what are we going to talk about? We've barely cracked. You have this thing is filled with sticky notes. We've covered two sticky.
We're
notes.
On two. We're sticky note number two, which is scrawled four principles/theories and four planes,
this
and that's
is
it.
Fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
Super. Yeah. Even if you don't quote unquote believe in any of this stuff, just an anthropological kind of survey of like, hey, here's an activity that human beings have taken very, very seriously throughout history. And there's actually a very well-developed like system of practice. Like maybe look into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very cool. And so in terms of what we were talking about, in terms of like how this is integrated into other world religions and people's understanding of the universe. So I'll just read this paragraph. Just how many of these other worlds and planes are supposed to exist depends on which particular mode of classification the magician chooses to use. Today, most of them prefer the fourfold classification of the Golden Dawn version of the Hebrew Kabbalah, and therefore refer to Atzeluth, the divine world of archetypal existence, basically like heaven, Bria, the creative world, sphere of archangels, and other types of spiritual entity, Yetzirah, the astral world, lying immediately, quote-unquote, above the plane of dense physical matter, and Asaya, the material world, the plane of ordinary physical existence. So this is the classification proposed basically within, like, the deep, deep manuals of existence within the Jewish faith, the Kabbalah. So this is like one way of looking at this, but this sort of structure is echoed. Basically, you dig deep enough into any world religion and you get this idea that the material world is just like the densest bottom layer where the heaviest
stuff.
That's
such a way to put it that I've never thought about before. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that there are layers sort of on top of that or sitting directly on top of it that are interacting with it in some way, and there's ways of accessing them and doing shit with them.
Yeah.
So we don't have that much time, I guess, to go through. So I'll just do a quick like overview of the rest of the context of the contents of the book. So,
and that sounds good. And then we'll figure out what we want to talk about in part two.
Yeah. Exactly. We can dive into any one of these sections later going forward. So basically he walks you through how to create, this book is a guide to beginning magical practice and exploration for yourself. So he tells you how to create and consecrate a temple, which is basically just like a ritual space for yourself. He goes into, oh, this is fun. Making and consecrating your elemental weapons. Hell yeah.
What?
Hell yeah, bro. So, okay. So one of the structures of Western ritual magic, the kind of basic structure of it, of accessing these other elements of reality, is creating relationships with the four magical elements, which are earth, air, fire, and water, right?
Yeah.
Each of those elements also have a corresponding tool, which you've probably seen these. These are the wand, the dagger, the cup, and the pentacle, which also show up in tarot cards.
Right.
For example.
Yes.
So there is a connection, by the way, between the tarot, the Western tarot and Western ritual practice. And the tarot is actually an intensely magical tool set that is deeply linked to this, and by the way, has other applications besides pure divination.
One thing I was interested in tarot of, like, there are just tarot cards. I could be completely talking out my butt. I got very into playing card games. Uh-huh. I love board games.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got very into just the beautiful simplicity of a deck of playing cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And tarot cards have also been used just for games. Yeah, that's not a modern thing.
No, 100%. Yeah, our modern deck of playing cards is absolutely based on the tarot, and that's the other thing too that I think is very interesting about more ancient cultures is that these very strict divisions between, like, oh, this is magic, this is science, this is religion, these are games, didn't necessarily exist.
It was blurrier than, yeah.
Exactly. And there's a lot of links, I think, actually between games of chance and divination,
yes,
and things like that.
Yes, that's a great point of, like, being actually favored.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like a weird, no, it's like, no, this is kind of intentional. And so there's methods of ritually creating these different tools. So the wand corresponds to air, the dagger corresponds to fire, the cup to water, and the pentacle to earth. And so these are sort of tools, I get just a very high level look at this, tools of or methods of like interacting with that aspect of reality.
Man.
So he gets into that, and there's very sophisticated ways. This is a very fun diagram or artistic rendering. I'll just show you this of one explanation of what's kind of happening when you invoke spirits. I don't know if you
So what I'm looking at here is it appears to be a person holding some swords on standing in a circle. Mm-hmm. There is a tornado force rising from what appears to be a bag or a hat of some kind. And then they appear to be engaging in battle with spirits.
100%. So what you're looking at there is there's like a left hand pane and a right hand pane. And on the left hand pane, that person is inside a magical circle, essentially summoning spirits, performing an evocation.
Yeah.
And on the right hand pane, what you're seeing is what appears basically on the spiritual plane, which is this magician is now suddenly visible, but protected by the magical circular barrier they've created. And so now all of a sudden this magician is brought to the attention of all these spirits who are like, what the fuck?
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow. That is, Well, fucking with it's going to be spooky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And in fact, I should say now that I always mix up evocation and invocation. Yeah, evocation is interaction with spirits. Invocation is interacting with deities. Evocation is the last part of this book because, at least according to this system and Western ritual magic, and I think this is echoed in many other traditions as well around the world, it is the most complicated and most dangerous element of magic and requires significant preparation.
Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
And can go very wrong. Yeah. And the reason for that is that, you, at least in this cosmology, you are interacting with fundamentally unbalanced but very powerful forces.
Mm.
And one of the aims of magic, actually, I might be kind of getting this wrong, but is basically the balancing and perfection of the self.
Interesting.
Across all of these planes. And when you've done that or you've become more balanced, you are more safely able to interact with these unbalanced forces that otherwise may be able to manipulate you or fuck with you in a way that is like, no, it's, you know, you're more centered.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, super interesting.
And it's very not woo-woo, you know? Like,
no, it's a very, and I don't mean to make this comparison in the sense that it's like imaginary, but like, say, in the way that like a tabletop RPG system is a self-consistent system.
Right.
You can learn the rules and play the game, and when this happens, you know what to do, you know how to resolve that. This is the same. It's not just like, oh, you do the thing and you see what happens. Like, no, there's steps and methods and outcomes that can be expected from this.
Interesting.
So the other contents of the book are, he talks about divination and different systems of divination, including tarot. He actually does incorporate the I Ching, which is interesting because that's a traditional Chinese system of divination, but it's become popular within the Western tradition. And geomancy, which is actually a European method of divination that predates the tarot, which we could maybe experiment with at some point.
Yeah, Eric, I know it says don't fuck with stuff. Eric, I'm gonna fuck with stuff. I'm gonna, the second it's like don't fuck with it, I'm gonna fuck.
I know you're
I'm
gonna fuck with
gonna
it.
Gonna fuck with it.
I know you
and
have to.
Like the fact that like it's dangerous. Yeah, baby.
Oh no, Brian, no.
My wife specifically told me today, Do not fuck with demons and spirits. And I'm gonna.
Yeah, at
I'm
least
gonna.
I would have you at least have your wife there.
No.
No? Okay.
No, she won't let me.
Okay, fair point.
No, I have to do it secret.
Okay, great. That's healthy.
Yeah. Yep.
Certainly not a red flag.
I have to secretly do it on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Secretly do it for 10 people who listen to us. So there's divination as kind of the first level of magical practice, which I think is just to get you more in touch with like the correspondences piece of things. He talks about astral projection, which is something we can experiment with. That's a little bit more like home experiment, a little safer. Then there's invocation, which is dealing with deities and entities. And then the last step is evocation, which is dealing with spirits and things like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Man, fuck.
Dude, I have to pee so bad. All right. I drank 30 Diet Cokes.
Do you want to get us out of here?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get out of here. Yeah, let's go. We're gonna cover the rest of that book ASAP.
Yeah.
Do
you want to do the music credits?
Yeah. Let's see. We want to thank, this has been Brian and Eric Don't Belong Here. We want to thank Purple Planet and Carl Casey and White Bat Audio for the use of their music. Do you got the rest? You want me to take it?
Take it.
Okay. Hey, do you want to get in touch with us? Contact us at spookybriananderic@gmail.com. We want to hear your ghost stories. We want to hear about your haunted houses. What can we investigate for you? We're here to help. Also check us out on social media, at Brian and Eric Pod on Twitter. And hey, maybe rate this podcast 3 stars on your podcasting app of choice. We're not asking for 5.
Man's 3.
We're not asking for 5. We're not asking for anything. Yardfield. 3 stars if you like it. And maybe leave a review or a comment on YouTube. For both of us here, Brian and Eric Don't Belong Here, thank you for listening.
Thank you guys.
Stay safe out there.
Stay safe.